This is an MP3 audio clip from the weekly People First radio broadcast.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
On Wednesday, May the 20th, 2010, formerly and currently homeless Ontarians launched a landmark legal challenge against the federal and provincial governments. Joined by housing advocates and their lawyers, the individuals are seeking a court declaration that Canada and Ontario have violated their rights under Sections 7 and 15 of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms by creating and maintaining conditions that lead to and sustain homelessness and inadequate housing. Tracy Heffernan is with the Advocacy Centre for Tenants in Ontario and is the lawyer for the applicants in the legal challenge. She joins us on the phone today. Welcome to People First Radio, Tracy.
Thank you, Kevin.
Now, Tracy, Jennifer Tanujaja is one of the applicants in this case. She says, quote, "I was homeless when I was younger, and I have lived for many years in inadequate housing. Each month I fear that I won't be able to pay the rent and that my sons and I will end up in a homeless shelter." What have you heard from the individuals involved in making this challenge?
Do you mean from Jennifer specifically or any of the applicants?
Any of the applicants, if there's any general things that you've ascertained from their experiences.
Well, one thing with regard to Jennifer Tanujaja, who is a 19-year-old woman with two sons and she's in full-time college and a straight-A student, is that she's currently on social assistance, but she ends up in Toronto paying almost more than double her shelter allowance from social assistance for her rent, which puts her into a very precarious situation in terms of being able to care for herself and for her two sons. But there are other applicants as well. There's an applicant by the name of Mr. Mahmood. Mr. Mahmood worked in a factory for about 14 years in Montreal, and he one day was in a serious industrial accident. His machine broke. He climbed to the top of it in order to repair it. There was sand on the top. He slipped. He fell. He crashed onto a metal table and became so disabled that he hasn't been able to work since that time. But he also has four children, two of whom have serious disabilities, one of whom is in a wheelchair. He and his family, six of them, are living in a two-bedroom, non-accessible apartment, which again is taking up a large chunk of their monthly income. So that would be another example of precarious, inaccessible housing that people in Ontario are facing. But we also have two other applicants, one of whom is currently living on the street. He is a man who had experienced homelessness. He then found a job as a peer support worker in a hospital, and he worked at that job for 4 or 5 years and was able to maintain an apartment. But into the fifth year of his job, he developed thyroid cancer. And as a result, he lost his job, then he lost his apartment, and he has been living on the streets for the last 4 years. And I can speak just briefly about the final applicant in the case, apart from our organizational applicant. But the final applicant is a woman who was living with her spouse and her two sons, who were about, at that time, 10 and 11 years old. Her spouse died suddenly. She did not have title to the house in which they were living. The house was taken over by her mother-in-law. She and her two sons lived with friends for 8 months, going from house to house, sleeping on couches and in their spare rooms if they were lucky enough to get a spare room. At the end of 8 months, they had nowhere else to turn. They ended up in a shelter. And at that point, this applicant, Janice, decided that she had to give up her two sons, that she couldn't lead them through this life of homelessness. So her parents took custody of her sons, and then she spent the next 5 to 6 years on the streets.
Now, the application you've made on behalf of these individuals and the organizational applicant that you referred to states that housing is a basic necessity of life and that rights to housing are also guaranteed to Canadians. Tell us more about that.
Well, we have the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. Mostly that charter has not addressed social and economic issues. And, you know, one should wonder why that has been so in Canada. And it's been questioned by any number of people. But within the charter, there are two sections that we are relying on. One is Section 7, and Section 7 says that everyone in Canada has the right to life, liberty, and security. And our argument is that when people are facing homelessness and when they're facing precarious housing, their rights to certainly security and often, in the case of homeless people, even their life is at threat, and that therefore the government is currently in violation of Section 7. But one thing that's interesting about that section is that when questioned by the United Nations about what the United Nations has deemed a national emergency in Canada, that is the deepening crisis of homelessness and inadequate housing, our government responded by saying, well, but we have Section 7 of the Charter, and that actually guarantees the right to basic necessities. So our own government has relied on the Charter to indicate to the United Nations that people do have recourse when their basic necessities are not being met. But the other section of the Charter is Section 15, and Section 15 says that people have the right to live free of discrimination. When you look at who is impacted by both homelessness and inadequate housing, what you find is that predominantly they are Aboriginal, they are single mothers, they have physical and mental health issues, they are from racialized communities. So when you look at who's impacted, you see that there is a discriminatory impact. Both the actions and the inactions that the government has taken have led to certain groups being discriminated against in our society.
Now, Tracy, the application also speaks to components of protections that governments in Canada should implement. I'm wondering if you could briefly speak to those as well.
Now, by components of protection, do you mean what we're seeking through launching this challenge?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So essentially what we're asking from both the Ontario government and the federal government is that there be a national housing strategy, that the government would actually look on a national and provincial basis at what the housing needs are and how those might be met. Now, some people might characterize that as, well, we're going to need to build a lot of public or social housing, but that, in fact, is not the case. That may be one component, but there are many other components, including ensuring that people have adequate income supports, and that the adequate income support, one component of that would be social assistance, and if you look at shelter allowances that are given to people on social assistance across the country, they tend to be woefully inadequate in terms of what the actual cost of rent is. But there are other, for instance, if you look at employment insurance, again, that's another benefit that for many, many Canadians has simply gone by the wayside. So in 1996, there were regulatory changes made to employment insurance. And what we saw across Canada is that whereas out of the applicants who applied, just let me get this right here, out of people who applied for employment insurance benefits, 80% were found eligible. Now across the country, 40% are found to be eligible. So even though people are paying their EI benefits through their work, they, in fact, if they lose their jobs, often find that they're not actually eligible for the benefits. So there are many things that have gone on in the Canadian landscape to lead to the current crisis that we have now. And we're saying to the government, we need to look at that. We need to look at that as a society. You need to look at it as a government. And you need to do that in consultation with groups who are affected by homelessness and inadequate housing to arrive at solutions that are actually going to work.
You're listening to People First Radio. In Canada, groups protected by discrimination by the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, including women, single mothers, people with disabilities, Aboriginal people, racialized communities, youth, and seniors, are disproportionately affected by homelessness and poor housing. A landmark legal challenge is underway, asking the Superior Court of Ontario for a declaration that Canada and Ontario have violated charter rights by creating and maintaining conditions that lead to and sustain homelessness and inadequate housing. Tracy Heffernan is with the Advocacy Center for Tenants Ontario and is the lawyer involved in this challenge. She joins me on the phone today. Tracy, what have you learned about the impacts of homelessness and inadequate housing? And I guess I'm reaching back to an earlier part of our discussion today. I'm wondering how those things that have been learned from the people listed in this application, how will these factors affect the case as it goes forward?
How will the factors,
the things that people have gone through, their sufferings.
The things that people have gone through,
yes.
Right. Well, what we've seen with regard to applicants, and there are many, many, you know, you're speaking to me from the Advocacy Center for Tenants Ontario, but in fact, this case has arisen out of a two years of work as part of a large coalition of groups, many of whom, and many of the members of that coalition have been impacted by homelessness and or inadequate housing in one way or the other. And what we see is that people who have experienced that in their lives have suffered an immense amount of trauma. And that could be, that trauma takes a lot of different, there are many different aspects to it. It could be the trauma of losing one's children. It could be the trauma of being, of trying to grapple with mental health issues and finding oneself simultaneously living on the street. It could be living with a physical disability, perhaps confined to a wheelchair, and yet living in inaccessible housing. Currently, in Ontario, families who have children who are disabled can wait 10 to 12 years before they get affordable, accessible housing. And what that means with respect to those children is that they are often confined to their room because they have no way to get around their apartment, let alone get outside of the apartment, and that their parents are often struggling to carry their children up and downstairs to take them to the washroom or take them outside or get them off to school, whatever the case may be. So the impacts of on people are profound. With respect to people who are living in shelters or on the street, what we see is a high rate of illness. That's both physical and mental illness. And then there's also a high morbidity or death rate as well.
Now, Tracy Kirk Macon, I think it's maybe, perhaps Macon, wrote in the Globe and Mail newspaper on May the 26th, quote, "The legal challenge harks back to the early heady days when activists saw the charter as a sweeping document that could induce reluctant governments to spend money on social programs," unquote. Now, he sounds a bit pessimistic. What are your thoughts?
Well, I have a few thoughts. It's interesting because that piece that was put in the Globe and Mail followed on quite a lengthy conversation with Kirk Macon regarding what even a former Supreme Court Justice, Louise Arbour, has characterized as the timidity of both judges and advocates to use the charter to push for social and economic rights in Canada. So whether it's hearkening back to heady days, I'm a little skeptical of that myself. I think rather what we're looking at is 28 years after the Charter came into place, what we're looking at is a time when people are saying, why isn't the Charter being used to advance social and economic rights? Why aren't we doing that? And how might we do that? But there's another piece to, in terms of what was suggested in what Kirk Makin wrote in the Globe and Mail, and that is that somehow what we're asking is for a huge expenditure of government monies. And that, in fact, is not the case. Study after study has shown that providing adequate housing costs less money. Some studies have even said it costs half the amount as compared to keeping people homeless. There are reasons for that. People who are homeless or inadequately housed suffer from higher degrees of physical illness, higher degrees of mental illness. The apprehension of children, for instance, into children's aid, some people estimate that at per child, that's $40,000 a year, you know, et cetera, et cetera. The costs go on and on. It's always interesting to look at that and to wonder, if it would actually cost less to house people, why aren't we doing that?
Hmm. Tracy Heffernan, we have just a few seconds left. I'm wondering, is there anything else you'd like to add to this conversation today?
Well, the one final thing I'd like to say is that the right to housing is not a new idea. It may be a new idea in Canada, but there are many countries in Europe who have adopted it, and they did it some time ago. And there are other countries, including South Africa, which actually has it written into their constitution. So it's not a new idea. More and more countries are looking at not only the societal cost, but the economic cost of not ensuring that people have adequate housing. And that's a cost in terms of children being able to get their education, of people being able to hold down jobs, of people who, for instance, if they are grappling with mental illness, actually have the opportunity to be housed and to address those issues. So there, it's not a new idea. It may be in Canada, but it's not in many other parts of the world.
Thanks very much for taking the time to join us today.
Okay, thanks very much, Kevin.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Tracy Heffernan is a staff lawyer with the Advocacy Center for Tenants Ontario. You can follow the progress of this legal challenge online at righttohousing.wordpress.com.
People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Centre Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society's CHLY 101.7 FM, CHLY.ca, community radio from Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily of these organizations.